Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Ramble Rouse and Rich Bergeron. We're just getting a little bit of a late start here. Connect Tony here in a second, and then Tom after that. And we have a special guest tonight, undefeated boxing prospect, Joey Dwecko. And he's coming on in about 10 minutes here. So just do a brief introduction. We got plenty to talk about. We got, of course, UFC on Fox 4 this weekend. It's Saturday. Big free show. And let's get Tom on here. Tony and Tom. We got another installment of the TNT segment we did last week. We kind of ended prematurely on that. Had a little technical difficulties. We apologize for that, of course. It might be a little slow tonight. The connection. Trying to connect Tony here. Okay, we're back. Finally, I think we're connected solidly here. I shut a few windows. Hopefully that helps. But we got about 2 minutes here before we have to add Joey to the call. You said you were familiar with him, Tony?
Yeah, actually, I haven't seen him fight live. I know he's, I believe, 7-0-1. I was just pulling up his record. Let me confirm that right now. Yeah, he's 7-0-1 with 3 knockouts. He fought in the local area. He fought at the Blue Horizon at a show I didn't make, unfortunately. You know, he's fought in, Harris Chester. I haven't gotten down there yet. He's fought a couple times in Atlantic City, and I have not been to fight in Atlantic City in a couple of years. Looking at some of the guys he fought, unfortunately, one of the few times that I'm not familiar with any of his opponents. He has a win over a gentleman by the name of John Lennox back this past September, who was 6-0 coming in. He stopped him in one round. But once you get on the phone, I met him at a fight card probably about a year or two ago. And actually gave him one of my business cards if he ever wanted to get on the show. So I guess better late than never.
Right. And how do you pronounce his name? Do you know? Is it Dwecko? Dwecko?
Dwecko, I think.
Dwecko?
I'm not 100% sure. Not.
All right, we got Tom with us finally.
All right.
So we're all connected. It's got to, for some reason it didn't save his number in the system, so we had to hook up, got the number in here again. That Skype is dragging on, being really slow for me tonight, so if I'm in and out, I apologize. I tried to shut every window I could to avoid that. Everybody hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay. One silent there for a second. So we have obviously a big UFC event this weekend. What do we got for boxing, Tony? Anything huge?
Last week we had Robert Guerrero. You know, he fought. Went the distance very impressively and defeating what was the guy's name, Mini Tyson. And my boy Hank Lundy lost a very close, he was upset on a Friday night, lost a very close decision. Hank got stunned in that fight, hurt pretty bad in the third round. Very good fighter. Raymond Beltrando. And his height advantage and his aggressiveness, I think, really threw Hank off the game. I thought Hank boxed well going down the stretch. But there was some of those early rounds he was really falling behind. And even around he was boxing well in, he wasn't landing a lot of punches. And he lost the decision on 96-94 on two cards, 95-95 on the other. Now, he's got to regroup. I think that throws a little bit of a curveball into his plan for a fight with Adrian Broner. And he just announced on Facebook yesterday that he's considering moving up to 140.
Really? Yeah. I saw the fight, and I really thought he did a great job moving around the ring and maximizing his reach. But he was a tough opponent there. That guy was just... you know, very orthodox, very, you know, basic type of style, but was just always good when he got Hank up against the ropes. And, yeah, that was probably, you know, the most trouble he's been in a long time. I thought it was going to be a draw, but it was kind of interesting to see the Facebook voting was correct.
Yeah, it was right on, you know.
And, you know, the punch statistics, obviously the fans get those. So it's kind of interesting to see that, you know, I think the judges did get it right. You know, even rooting for Hank, I figured the best he could hope for was a tie. But he did do a great job. He boxed and just couldn't handle some of the brawling that really just determined the final score.
Yeah, I mean, when you play the guy who... If you have
to call
that strong and that aggressive, that gives a hard time.
Yep. Anyway, we got Joey locked into the system here. Let's see if this works. Give him a call. Everything's like super slow tonight. Every time I hit a button, it takes like 5 minutes to activate. It's ridiculous. I think Hank will be able to regroup. I'm sure he's, obviously he's had to do that in the past. He's done it well.
Have reached your box number 26740206669. Please leave your message after the tone.
Hey, Joey, this is Rebel Rouse and Rich Bergeron. We're trying to get in touch with you for the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. Here, we'll try again in a few minutes. Hopefully, we'll get you. Looking forward to talking to you tonight. So now we've got to wait 5 minutes to hang up. Skype's not.
You know what I've noticed sometimes when dialing up with some of the guests? A lot of times, if a number comes up that's really goofy, you get times if the guys don't answer because they don't recognize the number. Then they get the voicemail, realize that it's us, and then they answer.
Yeah, it does happen a lot. Anyway, it's what it is.
Now, Rich, I want you guys to check out, hopefully I can get it on YouTube in a few days. I have a friend of mine. I'm training a bunch of people now because our one friend's getting married. We're all going to be in the wedding, so if it's we're all training like madmen because we want to get in shape for this wedding in October. So the one groomsman who I've known since we're kids, he came over Tuesday.
Your recording time is about to expire. Please finish your message within 8 seconds.
Did I just leave this on the poor guy's voicemail?
We left him a really long message.
To send this message now, press pound. To replay your message, press three. Message now, press pound. Your message has been sent. Thank you for calling.
All right. There's Joey. So we left him a message. I was doing a real joke.
We got some commentary on our channel. But back, I'm training. I've known these guys since we were kids. He's the one I always make fun of because he loves you so much. And so he's like, well, I want to learn how to box and I want to defend myself and whatever. I'm like, okay. I said, but the first thing I'm telling you right now is you're right-handed. You will not box as a southpaw in my gym. Yeah, that's where I feel natural. I said, but it's wrong. I said, I would teach you the right way to do it. Yeah, but I'm like, once again, you will listen. Okay, fine. So I'm trying to teach him. He's clumsier than hell, but he's had two training sessions. He's doing all right. He's like, I gotta get faster. I gotta do this and that. I'm like, you wanna get faster? I said, okay. I said, I'm going to the chicken farm on Tuesday. I said, you're chasing a chicken around my yard. I'm not chasing a chicken. This guy for you.
Okay, so back again, and lost Tom for a second there, so he'll be back. But just adding Tony here. Middle of the story about chasing chickens. I know from experience that's pretty hard because we got chickens here on my dad's farm. Not easy to catch those little suckers. I don't know what the hell's going on here with my computer, but it's really aggravating me. Tony, you're there, right?
Yep.
Okay. You were talking about your chicken story?
Oh, yeah, I was saying I was going to make the chicken. He said he didn't want to do it, and I told him, you know, I don't want to give him much of a choice now, do you?
Now you kind of faded out there. Say that again?
Oh, I said, he said, I don't want to change the chicken. He said, well, I don't want to give him much of a choice now. I said, if I do want to make the chicken farm, I'm going to change it back on the chicken.
Yeah, I got chickens here, and when they get out of their cage, it's not easy to catch those guys. Even when they know you're friendly. Personal experience with that one. Anyway, working on shutting a few other things down, make sure that this call doesn't disconnect again. I'm sure you'd have to reconnect Tom here in a second. Now we'll try Joey back. Hopefully that will give us any issues. Here's Tom. And there's Tom. Can you hear us?
I'm here.
All right. Just so I can shut this video down, I don't know if this is what's causing the problem, but I did want to mention one thing. We got Dana White just celebrated. the birth advice from another president who I was going to cite last week, but I just, for some reason, I didn't think of it when we were on this discussion about how Dana White didn't really build his business himself.
I'm always struck by people who think, well, it must be because I was just so smart. There are a lot of smart people out there. It must be because I worked harder than everybody else. Let me tell you something. There are a whole bunch of hard-working people out there. If you were successful, somebody along the line gave you some help. There was a great teacher somewhere in your life. Somebody helped to create this unbelievable American system that we have that allowed you to thrive. Somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you got a business, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen. The internet didn't get invented on its own.
There you go. That clip's been in the news this week and last week since you said it. And, last week when I was thinking about my rant about Dana White complaining about his fighters, I thought of that and said, oh, geez, I should play that. It definitely applies to him, even though it was a little bit taken out of context. And, they didn't let him finish the thought in most of these sound bites. He didn't really say nobody builds their own businesses. He clarified things later, but definitely applies to Dana White, whereas, he definitely didn't build it by himself. I don't even know if he put any money in, really. But it is what it is. This week, he's back in the news for saying that Matthews and Forrest Griffin should retire. And I actually thought Forrest Griffin was already retired. Matthews. But apparently he's must be looking for another fight or something, because Dana White's out there saying he should retire. It's been a while. His last fight was when he got knocked out by Josh Koscheck, I think.
Yeah, and I haven't heard anything about him being back in the mix at all. So it's surprising Dana said that. Like you said, maybe there's something else he wants. But
and he's basically saying that he's told Forrest he should retire, and Forrest doesn't want to hear it. And I don't think he should be in any position to ask somebody to retire. If they're not going to fire him because he's doing that bad, then why would you say you should retire?
Would say, hey, as long as he's a draw. I think Dana's premise, I read something where he was saying, if you can't realistically have a shot at the title, why are you hanging around? Well, maybe a lot of these guys, especially in the John Jones and Anderson Silva division, a lot of them are hanging around for the paycheck, and they're warriors. They want to fight.
Yeah, look at the Huas, the Nogueras, Frank Mir. Those guys are probably never going to get a title, but they're still hanging around, and they're still getting paid, and they're still getting put on cards. So, if you're going to say that about one person, why would you not say it about them? You think it's just, that's the only thing an MMA fighter lives for, is to fight for a title?
Yeah, exactly. There's just so many that struggle with the lower levels, and it's the same thing in boxing. You just have some guys just are going to just go on and on because that's what they do. That's their identity. I would agree that I would let the market decide and let the fighter decide.
So happy birthday, Dana White. Now shut the hell up. There's Joey. We're going to try Joey again. Hopefully we can connect. We got a solid connection for once here. Here's the Obama video that was doing it, sucking us down. I guess that's a metaphor. Joey, answer being fun.
You have reached error box number 26740206669. Please leave your message after the tone.
Hey, Joey, this is Rebel Rousing Rich Bergeron again from the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. We got your number. We're supposed to have you on at 8:30 here. So we'll give you another 5 minutes, and we'll try again. Sorry about that long message earlier. All right, so can't do that right now. So what we will do is we'll talk about the Olympics. I know there was some good early starts for the U.S. fighters, the males. I haven't really heard much about the women. I haven't read much, but I know that yesterday was a bad day for Olympic boxing for the United States guys. Three guys lost their fights. A guy from Lima, Ohio, a guy named Carlos Suarez, has a beef about his scoring. Of course, the scoring is completely different than regular boxing. It's generated a lot of controversy. This guy was from Lima, Ohio, but he's fighting for Trinidad and Tobago. And he dropped a 16-6 decision Tuesday to a guy from Turkey. And it was a tremendously sloppy bout.
I think the guy from Turkey was on the canvas, no less than 12 times, from like wrestling and clinching and just like, I remember when I fought your good friend Jesse Bond. I mean, it was like, he was notorious for trying to clinch and hold and then just falling over.
Right. Yeah, it was easily a dozen times he fell to the canvas. And there was another boxer. I'm not sure if it's the same one, but the guy was down like three times in the third round, and they gave it to the other guy. So it's definitely a big problem over there with the scoring.
Do either one of you guys know anything about this Japanese fighter that supposedly was robbed in a decision? I didn't see it, but have you heard anything about that?
There was some article about that I don't know if I copied here, but I did see that they did reverse a decision because of that. It was a fight that the guy was down three times in one round.
And still lost.
Right.
So in other words, he knocked his opponent, he scored three knockdowns in one round in a three-round fight, and the judges had him losing the decision. Am I hearing you right?
Right, here it is. Japan's Satoshi Shimizu filed a protest after he lost a 22-17 decision to second-seeded Magomed Abdulmagomedov, despite sending him to the canvas six times in the third round. Six times in the third round. What appeared to be an exhausted fighter's attempt to maintain a narrow lead. Amateur boxing's governing body overturned the result late Wednesday night, allowing Shimizu to advance. And that wasn't the only one. Iran's Ali Mazahiri left the ring without shaking hands over being disqualified for holding, but that wasn't overturned. He's definitely upset about that one.
Right before we got on the air tonight, I was watching the one bout. It was, I believe, a fighter from maybe Russia. He's definitely, Eastern European fighter, fighting a Great Britain. And I just happened to come in for maybe about the last 30 seconds of it. Then they were going on the decision, and I remember the Eastern European fighter was really like pointing his chest, and the other fighter from Great Britain, he didn't look as confident. And then I know Teddy Atlas had raised like a yellow paddle, which I guess means that there was on the electronic scoring was even, so they had to go to the tiebreakers. And that's how it ended up, going to the tiebreakers, and the Great Britain fighter won. And then Teddy Atlas came out and said, he goes, I don't know if I agree with that decision, as I've not agreed with many of the decisions I've seen. So I'm like, oh, great. So it's same bullshit that we've had to deal with for the last, you know, 20 years. We're
right.
still having it, still plugged in from 2012. I'm looking right now online, so I haven't had a chance to really watch anything about. We're only down to two U.S. fighters left. Looks like we had one fighter losing, Terrell Gasha, lost a 15-15 decision. And then Jose Ramirez lost a 15-11 decision. But then again, it's like you don't know how accurate that is. Now we're down to the U.S. You know, we're down to Errol Spence and Rashe Warren. Now, Rashe Warren, this is his second or third 4A representing the U.S. in the Olympics, because he is determined. He did a fight better for determination. And the thing that might be really helping him out here, this is his third attempt at doing it, that he has experience with this bullshit judging and bullshit scoring.
Big time. But, you know, there was another study out, too, that I found, I think it was like a day after last week's show. There was a study that determined that Olympic boxing is really detrimental to the health. I know we're going to talk about this later, but I found it pretty fascinating. It was talking about how, you know, the big thing now with the football players is second impact syndrome and with concussions and stuff like that. Well, now they're saying that Olympic boxing, because these guys fight, you know, so soon after, you know, a first fight in the Olympics, they're fighting again, that it's causing injuries. Let's see if I can find this article. But it makes sense, you know, it's definitely something. If you get a concussion and they can't detect that, and then you get hit again, it could cause serious injury. Thankfully, we haven't heard anything from these games as far as serious injuries to these guys, but who knows whether that's a factor of, you know, these guys are not really trying to knock each other out as much as just trying to score points and save themselves for the final. But here we go. Read the whole article here. It's a pretty short article. Olympic boxers risk fighting while still suffering the effects of concussion as they strive to win medals at the games. Shanna Nafelius of Gothenburg's, I don't even know how to pronounce this, Salangrivska Hospital told Reuters how tests had shown that despite showing no symptoms, many amateur boxers were returning to the ring before full recovery. A former amateur and professional in the female version of the sport, Nacelius said spinal fluid was extracted from each of the boxers 1 to 6 days after their last fight. The test was then repeated 2 weeks later. She said, "What we found was that 80% of the boxers had high levels of certain proteins in their spinal fluid, which means they have got small amounts of damage to the brain, which we call concussion. After the rest period, most of them had normalized, but 20% still had elevated concentrations." Amateur boxers like Salomo Ntuve, a Swedish Olympic prospect, pounding a punching bag in a suburban gym with his brother while his brother looked on, will have to take part in up to 6 fights in 2 weeks in order to win a medal. That allows little time for rest or recovery, but the 23-year-old still shrugged off the risk. It's not like you're fighting every day. If I'm fighting today, tomorrow, I relax, then the day after I'm fighting again, he said in a break to his routine. It's enough. I have been boxing for 9 years. I can recover after 1 day. And he said he's well aware of the dangers of boxing, but they do not bother him, although they did worry. He says, almost every sport is dangerous. Boxing is dangerous because people think it's dangerous, but it's not so dangerous. Of course, my mom gets worried. Of course, my dad gets worried. But when they see me fighting, that's why I don't want them to come to the Olympics. If they worry, I'm going to be worried too. and he said that he never felt Wilkinson had never been knocked out in his amateur career, but was resigned to it happening at some point in the future. He says, I tell myself if I continue to box, I will get knocked out someday, but I don't want that day to come. It's part of boxing to be knocked out, but I'm just not worried about losing. Or I'm just worried about not losing. That's what he said. Asked how he prepared mentally to protect himself with so many fights in such a short time, Nitube laughed. Prepare mentally? I prepare mentally to kick his ass, that guy in the other corner. Just go inside and win. That's the most important thing for me. And as Dr. Nicelius said, the long-term effects of the sort of minor brain damage suffered by Olympic boxers were as yet unclear. What we do know is that early studies have not been able to show long-term damage, but we have to learn more. It'll be interesting to follow this group and see what will happen in the long term, what will happen with the people who had elevated concentrations. So, that was in the news this week. I thought it was apropos to mention that. You know, I don't know if taking away the headgear like they said they're going to do in 2016 will have any effect on that. But, you know, it is it's kind of a unique thing. There's very few sports in the Olympics where, actually, really, boxing is one of the only sports where, you know, your object is to damage the other opponent or, you know, actually trade blows with somebody. You know, you could get hurt, of course, in any sport. But concussions and brain damage, you know, it's one of those things that boxing and all combat sports have to think about and address at certain points. But before we get to any further here, let's try Joey one more time, and then we'll go into our TNT segment on that subject. We didn't get him this time.
Have reached airbox number 26740200669. Please leave your message.
So we don't get Joey. I will I'll try sending an email out to his publicist here. We'll see if we can change that. But I guess that's the clue that it's time for old TNT. Talking about but in combat sports in general, Tony and Tom, you can kind of break it down for your particular sports. You know, what do you think can be done to prevent injury and to address, you know, obviously the safety on both sides of the coin there? And Tom, why don't you start first on this one?
Well, you know, I was really doing a lot of thinking on which is more dangerous, really, and what has more potential for long-term damage. And my opinion is boxing, and it'll be interesting to get Tony's comment on that. But I think, now my reasoning is a few things. First off, if you look at the culture of the two sports, now we can go back, and I think the best example is the Sugar Ray Leonard-Roberto Duran rematch, you know, the infamous No Mas fight. And in that fight, you know, you guys know the details quite well. I mean, Duran was just, it wasn't working for him. And his excuse was stomach cramps. Maybe it was just an impromptu, you know, it's not my night tonight. But, you know, there were some people, the hardcore boxing aficionados, that never forgave Duran for that. You know, in spite of coming back and capturing the super middleweight title, capturing the middleweight title, and even competing at super middleweight for quite a few years. The culture is just such that you don't quit. Now, in MMA, on the other hand, if it's not your night, it's not your night. You don't see that same kind of culture. Now, I think that it may be due to the whole idea of submissions, you know, that no matter how tough you are, if you're caught in a choke or caught in a joint lock, it's not a matter of gutting it out. It's a matter of saving your career, and there's not much choice about tapping. But I think that the culture of boxing is very different in that sense, and I think it could lead to more long-term problems. Plus, in MMA, there's so many other ways to win a fight besides KO. And I think that you do have different options. I mean, if I'm getting lit up on the feet in an MMA fight, hopefully I would have the grappling ability to get it to the ground and go from there. Whereas in boxing, I think your choices are far more limited. So I would say between the two of them, that's my take on it. And as far as the safety issues, I think things have come a ways in boxing because, again, we can go back to even, you know, 20, 30 years ago, and I think that fights are stopped somewhat quicker now. But on the other hand, do we want to go too far? You know, do we want to go too far in that direction? You see what I mean? And so maybe there's not a whole lot that can be done. And I know as far as MMA, it's sort of the same thing sometimes that there's a little bit of, some fights will have controversy. Well, maybe it was stopped a little too quick. I think that the key there is good officiating. But there's something else, too, that with the breakthroughs that we've had in the field of genetics, I read years ago that geneticists were on the verge of being able to see if there was a gene involved in, what's the scientific phrase for punch roll? Was it pugilistia dementia? And if they could find that gene and isolate that gene, then you are going to be denied a license to fight. And they were talking about boxing specifically, but I'm sure the Athletic Commission would carry it over into MMA. And maybe that would be the biggest breakthrough if that gene could be isolated. But at this point, I mean, as far as options for more safety, I don't see a whole lot else that can be done. I mean, you've got the safety equipment that, you know, the fighters have the mouthpiece and you have the protective cuff. And aside from that, I mean, if we go too far, then I think we'll kill both sports. So that's my take.
All right. Tony, you're up.
All right, and I know, Rich, we've discussed this many times in the past, and the general consensus of you and I and whoever our guest would be, I know we've spoken with John Scully about this on several occasions. Boxing is the sport where you are going to see a long-term injury, and one of the reasons that we've discussed is the fact that not only are the fights usually longer, the gloves are a little bit more padded, so, you know, a lot of times you don't get the quick knockout. You get more sustained punishment. the one thing that I love about boxing, and I'm going to bring up two fights in the past decade as examples, but these were also fights that, you know, could have caused some damage. Now, the fighters I mentioned have passed away tragically, not under boxing terms. The first fight I'm going to mention is Jose Luis Castillo and Diego Corrales, their first fight. You know, Castillo knocks, it's a back and forth fight, you know, a lot of trading back and forth, ebb and flow. Corrales' eyes swollen shut, he's hitting Castillo, and going into the 10th round, it's all but even. And out of nowhere, Castillo lands a hook. Boom, Corrales goes down. In an MMA fight, it's pretty much over because all Corrales would have had to do, or Castillo would have had to do, was just jump on him, 2-3 punches here, fight's over. Corrales gets up, he's hurt, he's staggering. It's like, oh my God, is he going to be able to survive? Is he going to be able to come back? Down he is again. Once again, MMA fight, it's over. He gets up, he's bleeding, he's hurt. And all of a sudden, he pulls out from nowhere. Out of left field comes a big left hook and turns the fight around. By the end of the round, he's knocking Castillo out. Now, right there is a fight that, you know, say he didn't make that comeback, but there was a chance for Castillo to land more punches that may have not been necessary, you know, and he could have, you know, caused more brain damage there. Another fight that I'm going to bring up was the first, actually, I could bring up all three Gotti Ward fights, because in each fight, one of the competitors was down and hurt, you know, in the ninth round of their first fight. Ward lands a body shot to put Gotti down. He barely beats the count. Ward is pacing him, then Gotti starts pacing him, and then it ends back to Ward. In an MMA fight, that would have been over. But there was sustained punishment for both guys, as happened in the second fight when Gotti knocked Ward down in the third round and had him out on the seat. And then back in the third fight, even though Gotti won, Ward had him on the canvas at one point with a pretty good right hand. Those were instances where a fighter took extra punishment. Now, those instances, those fighters had come back to win, but in the same breath. Well, actually, let's go back to the second Gotti Ward fight. Gotti knocks Ward down with the right hand in the third round, early in the round. Actually, broke his eardrum, really screwed up his equilibrium. Ward got up, and because it was Ward, they didn't stop the fight. If it was some four-round, you know, kid or even, you know, a fringe contender or whatever, you know, they're stopping that fight. Because it's Mickey Ward, they let it go. And Gotti really pummeled him pretty good over the rest of that round, and he got the better of him in that fight. Hit him with a lot of good shots. Could that have caused Ward longer-lasting damage? Absolutely. The gloves being more padded, you know, you are going to see repeated punches instead of fights ending early. Just like Tom said, you know, in boxing, you really only have one method to win, and that's punching your opponent. You know, you don't have grappling. You don't have submissions. You don't have chokes. You know, all you can do is punch. So that's why, you know, you will see more long-term injuries. You will see more brain damage in a sport like boxing. Also, Tom mentioned that certain fighters react to it differently, and we actually had three fighters on back-to-back-to-back weeks back in the fall, that three different, totally different examples, and actually all were on the 88 Olympics team. We had Ray Mercer. Ray Mercer, gold medalist in the Olympics, you know, had a long professional career. He was stopped, I know, one time by Vladimir Klitschko, but he was known for his awesomely great chin. He had a few MMA fights, so he obviously wants another fight with Kimbo Slice. Ray, great memory, you know, very clear way of speaking, you know, very easy interview. Then we had Roy Jones Jr. on. Roy Jones, you know, 88 Olympian, should have been a gold medalist. Multiple-time world champion, but he has suffered in the last 8 years several devastating knockouts. He was knocked out by Antonio Tarver, knocked out cold by Glenn Johnson. He was punished by Calzaghe. He was hurt again in the third fight with Tarver. He was knocked out over in Russia last year, and he was knocked out by Danny Green. So this is a guy, you know, that's taken a lot of concussions. So now with Grace Miao, you would never be able to tell that he was even a boxer. He speaks so clearly, and his memory was fantastic.
Just a little too fast.
Yeah. Sometimes. Then we get Riddick Bowe on the phone with us. And Riddick, he had some very tough fights with Evander Holyfield. But the only fights that he really had ebb and flow with were the three fights with Holyfield and the two fights with Andrew Gullotta. And the Gullotta fight, he took a severe punishment in both of those fights. But Riddick and I, Tom, were actually laughing because if Riddick laughed, we laughed. We had no idea what he was saying.
Yeah, that was a rough interview. Said he wanted to fight me.
He was very personable. Very personable. And he was willing to talk to us pretty much about anything. But there were times like he was, and he did have, like, some things clicked. Like we talked about Holyfield and how he said, yeah, I want a fourth fight with Holyfield, and he's, going to be 1-3 after it's done, and I'm going to knock him out for the second time. Yeah, he was really sharp with that. But you're saying other things to him, and, I remember emailing Rick as we're doing the interview. I'm like, dude, I don't know what he's talking about.
Poor guy. I was all the best that he didn't make that comeback that he was talking about, I guess.
Very true.
But,
While we're on that topic, too, if you look at a guy that I always want to keep going back to, but George Savala was the kind of guy that I think that, with his style, he wasn't the quickest, didn't have the biggest punch. I think he knew his limits, and he fought that way. I don't know of anyone tougher. I don't know of anyone that absorbed more punches. And yet if you hear him today, you wouldn't know it. And then you take a guy like Jerry Quarry, who, took his share of shots too, but maybe not quite as much as Shivalo, but look at how he was toward the end. Apparently Quarry was so bad that if he snuck out of the apartment, his mom had to call the police to look for him. He didn't even know where he was at. So maybe that I keep getting back on that genetic thing that maybe some people should just never get in there in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I boxed, I came close to getting knocked out once, and I had my last sparring session, the last time I was sparring actively a couple of years ago, I had about 3 days worth of residual effects where there wasn't really pain or any kind of spaced out feeling, but you could just definitely sense like one area in front of my head that was just kind of sort of like numb, like pulsing a little bit, but it didn't hurt or anything. It was just kind of a weird feeling there, so it was kind of like, all right, I'm definitely doing something to my brain here. So I can definitely attest that just even sparring can trigger some damage, and actually there's a kid died in California this week from sparring and boxing.
I read about that, but so very tragic. 16 or 17 year old kid, and you hate to read that, and I'm pissed off at you for bringing it up because I was trying to get it out of my mind.
Sorry.
It's
one of those reminders that boxing is that type of sport and combat sports in general, and you really risk your life to step into that cage or that ring and fight somebody, and so. No money is enough, really. We always talk about, whether MMA should pay fighters more. And of course, the answer is yes. I mean, even if it isn't as dangerous as boxing and as life-threatening, we still had some MMA deaths. Of course, seems like most of the time they're in these little feeder leagues, but I think we've had a couple in some of the bigger leagues over the years. Even though for years and years and years it went on that streak where nobody had died in any official MMA bout, any sanctioned bout. It's going to catch up to some of these guys, and especially the longer they fight. But it's just too young a sport to really gauge, you know, how damaging a full career can be to a lot of these guys. I mean, we'll have to come back and check out like guys like Fedor Emelianenko 5 years from now and see if any of the residual effects are, you know, with guys like Randy Couture seemed fine. I mean, he's doing all his regular duties, and he had a lot of fights under his belt.
I'd like to see where Chuck Liddell will be 5 years from now, 5-10 years from now.
Yeah. Chuck is kind of an anomaly if you're doing that kind of a test, because he's done a lot of drugs. I mean, I've heard some inside stories about Chuck and his cocaine and ecstasy habits, and it's not pretty. So I don't know if you could really put him on that testing roster.
I remember one time during an interview he was nodding out, and it was in the morning. And
yeah.
The announcer, I don't know if you've seen that one, but the announcer says, Chuck, are you all right? So, well, who knows?
He blamed it on NyQuil. And there's one of the funniest pictures I've ever seen photoshopped was Chuck in his Iceman pose with, you know, screaming and his arms out by his sides. And somebody had superimposed two giant NyQuil bottles in his hands. Great. But yeah, Chuck is
I want to bring up with regard to injuries. And I read an article in Ring Magazine probably about a year or two ago regards to this. And the reason I'm bringing it up is because I'm someone that dealt with doing this is cutting weight drastically.
Most sports have that problem.
Yeah, but here's the problem. In most other sports, obviously wrestlers cut weight like crazy. I mean, the way I learned how to do it was from a wrestler at Lock Haven. They were the ones that gave me the tips on, hey, you got to, you know, do this, do this. And they're the ones that got me down the 15 or so pounds in less than 3 days for the weight. I started on Tuesday afternoon, and I was like in the high 170s, and by Friday morning I was 165. And I felt weak, I felt drained, and I actually, as I was doing all this, it was like I was having headaches because my brain was like, I guess, not getting the nutrients and not getting the hydration that it needed, and everything was suffering on me. But you get fighters, improvement they've tried to make over the last so many years is they've moved the weigh-ins, you know, for the most part, you know, For big shows, at least, for the guys, you know, weighing in the day before. And then some local cards still have the weigh-in the morning of, but at least gives you 8 to 10 hours to rehydrate yourself. But when you have these people that are, you know, sucking down all this weight, and if they don't recover from it, I mean, first of all, they're weakened physically. They're apt to take more punches. They probably will not take the punches as well. I fought a guy when I did that by the name of Rick D'Artone, and Rick and I fought 2 times before, and we were 1-1 against each other. The second time I fought him, I boxed his ears off. I mean, it wasn't even really competitive. And I remember Rick hit me with a punch in our regional finals in the first round, and my legs buckled. I said, wait a minute. I said, Rick never even made me. I mean, Rick could punch. He was a strong guy, and he was a former rugby player. But in all times we were in the ring with each other, I never even blinked any of the time he hit me. My leg bucked from the first punch he landed. I'm like, what the hell is this? And then I was out boxing him, and then third round he throws an overhand right, and I kind of walked into it, and I just collapsed. And I remember hitting the ground, and I looked up, I was like, what the hell? And I sprung up. And I remember Gary Rosado was the referee, and Gary now referees fights on HBO. I've known him for 17 years now. And after the fight was over, he pulled me aside. He goes, I was going to stop that fight when you went down. And I said, why, Gary? He goes, because you went down hard, the whole fight is you weren't looking good physically. You were winning the fight up until the end, but you were not looking good. And he goes, when you got up, your eyes were completely gone. And he goes, I could tell that, you know, you weren't all there, but I asked you a question and you answered it. I asked you to walk forward and you did, and I knew there was only 10 seconds to go, and I knew you didn't have a chance really to get hurt. That's why I let you, you know, continue, even though I knew you were going to lose the decision. And I appreciated that from him, of course, but, you know, he could tell by my physical body language in that fight that I was in trouble before the bell even really started.
Well, what do you think about going back to the way they did it in the old days in boxing where you weigh in the day of the fight? Would that make it safer? Because the idea is you weigh in the day before and you won't have all that trouble of dehydrating right before the fight. But maybe weighing in the day before is making it worse. I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
You know what they've been doing, Tom, which I think is a great idea, at least for a lot of title fights, and hopefully they can start expanding this. They will have fighters, say you're fighting at 165, as I was. They were having weigh-ins periodically going into the fight. So it's not like, which I did, that was the year that I fought in five different weight classes. So I was jumping all over the place. I mean, nobody else has done that since because it was stupid. But on like the Tuesday before the weigh-in, I'm pretty much almost at 180. And then by Friday, I'm stretching myself down to 165. What they're doing now is the fighters are going to fight at 165. The fight's been contracted, you know, months prior. Well, 5 weeks before the fight, you have a weight that you have to be at. You have to be at pretty much within, like, 10% of where you got to fight at. I know for a guy like Floyd Mayweather is going to fight at 147. Well, by 6 weeks before the fight, he's got to be at less than a certain amount, like 157. And then that way they're knowing that he's not training the whole time at, like, 170. And then at the last minute, cutting, like, all this amazing weight and then stepping back in the ring with a 20-pound weight advantage.
Well, it happens, I think, a lot more in MMA because there's not as many weight classes where guys just cut excessive amounts of weight. And they had a segment on MMA Uncensored Live where they actually had, like, a baking pan full of hamburger. It was 30 pounds. And I think they were talking about Chael Sonnen cutting as much weight as he did before the Anderson Silva fight. And from what I remember, it was always not only the day of, but a few hours before the match when I wrestled is when you weighed in. And I've only had to cut weight maybe two or three times because I actually wrestled heavier than I was senior year. When I wrestled most of my varsity matches, but there was one kid on our team who was just classic. He wrestled 189. He was really a heavyweight, and he would bring just a cooler full of stuff and just would wrestle his ass off. And was one of our best wrestlers because he was able to, you know, sustain the weight cut and then just recover and go out there and win. And in one particular match, he pinned this kid in, like, literally, like, 20 seconds. And as soon as the match was over, I've never seen anything like it. He bolted off the mat, busted through the double doors, literally crashed through them, and just disappeared out of the arena. And everybody's like, what the hell? And turns out he had diarrhea. He had to evacuate in more ways than one. And he got the outstanding wrestler for that match, too. Kind of funny. Talk about urgency. But I always felt bad because, you know, here I am not having to cut a pound, and he's out there having to cut 15 to 20 pounds before every match. But he did it, and then he would eat his stuff as cooler full of stuff and drink his Gatorade and go out there. So I guess you could say it can be done as far as the day of weigh-ins for both mm-hmm. sports. But
yeah, well, I guess my whole point is, for years in boxing, that's the way it was done. And I don't know, I mean, if they came up with some studies on fighter safety to do it the way they're doing it now, I don't know. But for years, that system seemed to work. I mean, they'd have the weigh-in around noon, and then the fights were that evening. For years, it was like that. Well, you guys know that.
Yeah, I've heard some stories, too. Go ahead, Tony.
I was talking to this girl that I haven't met her personally, but she's being trained by a former teammate of Mark Hagan, Philadelphia kid by the name of Fred Druden. Fred was only at Lock Haven for a semester. He had he was a paralegal, and he had just decided to come to Lock Haven to box, you know, and only then after that he was going to come back the next year, but then decided to go, take a job and start working. So he was a very bright kid, and he and I got along great. We're both Philadelphia guys, both love boxing. He and I could sit down and talk for hours. So we're getting ready for the 97 regionals, which was the 180 to 165 cut that I just talked about a few minutes ago. Now, Fred had a choice. He could fight at either 125 or 132. And he was resting right at about 128 to 129 at the time. You know, he had been fighting 132 the whole semester and didn't have to cut weight at all. He was right there. And they're like, Fred, we're giving you a choice. You can either drop the additional 4 or 5 pounds and fight at, 125. Or stay where you're at and fight at 132. And he thought of that. He goes, I'm going to stay at 132. I'm happy there. I feel good. I don't want to cut the weight. So we go to the regional first day. He and I both have buys. So all we got to do is make the weight. I step on the scale, sitting in a cup. He steps on the scale with not an ounce of clothing on me. All I was wearing is what I came into the world with. And I'm looking like shit. Fred gets on the scale, fully clothed, still 3 pounds under. So that night, we go back to my dorm, I was one of the few dorms that had a cable box. I paid for it so I could watch HBO fights. Roy Jones is fighting that night against Montel Griffin, the first fight. So, and I'm like, dude, do you want to come over and watch the fight? Yeah. And he goes, I don't want to upset you. Would you mind if I got something to eat? I'm like, Fred, I don't give a shit. He comes to my room with a fucking 10-inch meatball parm and a huge Gatorade. There's me with a lettuce leaf and an orange sliver. and he keeps apologizing to me. Dude, I'm so sorry. Dude, I'm so sorry. Dude, I don't mean to eat in front of you like that, man. I am so sorry. I don't mean to eat in front of you like that. I said, Fred, I'm going to tell you something right now. That meatball parm is actually making me nauseous just to look at it. Cause I hadn't eaten pretty much anything but lettuce, celery, and orange slivers in 4 days almost. I said, that meatball parm is actually making me sick to look at. But I said, I'll fucking rip your heart out to get to that goddamn Gatorade. I'm so dehydrated. We went about it, and he introduced me to this girl that he's training. She's down in Kansas City for the Ringside Nationals. So I became friends with her on Facebook, and I told her that story today. She thought it was fucking hilarious. I'm like, yeah, 15 years later, we still have a good laugh about it.
Cool.
But actually, he just gave me a report today that, he was telling that going down there, that the girl that she just drew in today's matchup is, in his opinion, the toughest girl in the weight class. And he goes, but you know what? From watching all these things, I got to be honest, it's still tough. Because we didn't come down here to go to Kansas City to watch no show or go to a play. We came down here to fight, and that's what we're going to do. And the report that I got out of him tonight is that she won. And now she moves on, I think, to the quarters of the semis. And Kelly Ryan, and I'm going to talk to maybe get her and Fred on the phone, maybe get them to do an interview with us after she comes back from KC.
Sweet. Well, women boxing is actually already making its mark here in the Olympics. We have a story here about the AIBA is going to ask the IOC to increase the sport's overall athlete allocation so women's boxing will have more than London's 36 fighters in 3 weight classes for Brazil. The president's of the AIBA there said the IOC will look at the performance, the result of women's boxing, and as president of the AIBA, if it's really positive, I certainly had the duty and the responsibility to fight for more, because we now have 3 gold medals for the women and 10 for the men. And I haven't even actually seen any women's boxing on TV. I don't know whether it hasn't happened or it hasn't been on, but I haven't even really seen more than 5 minutes of men's boxing either. It's kind of one of those things they don't seem to show a lot for some reason. They're all thinking everybody's jazzed up about the freaking swimming and the gymnastics. I don't really watch a whole lot of either one of those, but I'd love to see some boxing, especially, you know, the inaugural female boxing here. But, of course, we also have a big card. So we get to it here. We got Shogun versus Brandon. And here's another knock on Dana White. He tried to say this week that, you know, it was automatically going to be the winner of that bout who was going to go up against Anderson Silva next. And now he changed his mind and said that the two middleweight fights there on this card are going to be judged on who gives the better performance and the win, and that will. So it's kind of interesting. But we also have Lyoto Machida, Ryan Bader. Machida is 17-3. Bader is 14-2. So whoever wins that one is going to get themselves elevated in the light heavyweight picture there. Joe Lozon's back, fighting a very tough opponent, almost identical records. Lozon's 21-7. Jamie Varner is his opponent. He's 26-1, 21-6 losses, 1 draw. Mike Swick is on the card again. He's back. He hasn't been in the cage for a while. He's 14-4, fighting Demarcus Johnson. It's 15-10. Sounds like, you know, it's kind of a warm-up fight for Swick to get back in the action. Nam Phan was in the news this week for slamming Steven Seagal, who said he'd never heard of him. Nam Phan's coming in at 17-10. He's fighting Cole Miller, who's 18-6. We got Phil Davis, 9-1, fighting Wagner Prado, who's 8-0. That should be an interesting matchup. Guy I used to see in the little club shows in Massachusetts, Josh Grisby, is in action. He's 14-3. He's fighting Ronnie Yaya, who's 16-7. Both of those guys have some WEC history. We got Ollie Thompson, 9-3, fighting Philip Fries, who's 8-1. Michihiro Omagawa, 13-11 with 1 draw, fighting Manny Gambarian, who's 11-7. And we have Ulysses Gomez, who's 9-2, fighting John Moraga, who's 10-1. And of course, you know, you don't have superstars on this card, but it's pretty decent for a free card. I mean, Mauricio Shogun Hua there is 20-6 in the main event, fighting Brandon Vera, who's 12-5, and that's you know, a pretty good matchup there. We'll see. Brandon Vera is it's kind of been off in recent years. He hasn't been as stellar as he was when he started, but he's still a threat. You know, you never know how somebody can reinvent themselves in situations like this.
That's the fascinating question on this one, because you know how Vera, you remember in 2005, 2006, he said he's going to be the first guy to hold two belts simultaneously, the heavyweight and the light heavyweight. And then, if my memory serves me correct, he had some managerial problems that kept him out of action. And I was at the card. He fought in the semi-main in the Rich Franklin-Anderson Silva rematch down in Cincinnati. And he was fighting Tim Sylvia, if you remember that one. And it was, he just was not himself. I mean, just a lot of wall install, and it just, I don't know what the missing ingredient's been with him. Now, supposedly he's looked pretty good in training, but in spite of some of Hua's ups and downs, I kind of still go with Hua, but...
And the wrong name, I said Anderson Silva. It's actually going to be the winner of John Jones versus Dan Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
Will be their opponent will be decided by whoever does the best in these two co-main events here. So we're talking light heavyweight, not middleweight, right? Big mistake there. Even up too much for Anderson Silva to come up to light heavyweight and fight John Jones. Actually, that's another little tidbit of news I have, because Lorenzo Fertitta came out today or yesterday, and he says they're not really thinking too much about Jones versus Silva, but they are open to GSP versus Silva. And basically he says, find it here. We are very open to the idea of Anderson versus GSP. If GSP beats Condit, it's a fight we would like to make. And I remember hearing GSP for years say that he wasn't going to do that. He didn't want to do that. And then finally, at some point, he gave in and said he would consider it at a catchweight, I think. And then he got injured, so we kind of didn't hear about it anymore. But yeah, it's been over 3 years now since people have been calling for this fight and trying to make it happen. And nobody really is in the middleweight picture that I think Anderson Silva would even struggle with. So it's definitely something that I think would be a good idea to kind of spark some more interest in that division. And,
well, you know, it's interesting. Silva's manager, Ed Soares, was saying that he didn't mean to disrespect Chris Weidman, but he didn't feel that at this point Weidman has done enough to earn a title shot. So the fight they say they would like, if they don't get GSP, would be Nick Diaz.
Right.
So
that was kind of interesting too, because Diaz just came out in public and said he wants that fight with Anderson Silva too. So actually, today, I didn't read the article, but I saw a headline that somebody was saying, or I think it was Cesar Gracie, was saying that Dana White and the UFC should let Diaz fight overseas and ignore the NSAC restrictions, which I thought was kind of weird. I mean, just serve out your sentence, buddy.
Yeah.
You know, have some patience, but we'll see. I mean, he had a chance to fight in some kind of... and, you know, bounced out of that when he had the chance. So I don't think he should be trying to get back into MMA too early. But for this weekend on Fox 4, here's another story worth mentioning here. They're going to introduce the RefCam. Fox is known for its unique production, I guess, here, and they released a their event at the Staples Center in Los Angeles, and they say it's going to bring fans to a place they've never been, within inches of the fighters battling in the cage. And it's going to be similar to the idea of the catcher cam and the diamond cam that Fox Sports has utilized in baseball, and the gopher cam in NASCAR. And it's going to be also similar in size to those cameras, be lightweight, wireless, high definition radio frequency transmission camera. And I know Pride did that before, the ref cam, and it was pretty obvious. It was a pretty big camera. But obviously they're not around anymore, and the UFC bought them out. So I guess if there's going to be no copyright infringement or any kind of lawsuit over them using that idea again. But it's just about time. You know, I've been waiting for something dynamic with these, you know, this big partnership between Fox and the UFC, and that's definitely something new and dynamic. We'll see how that turns out. Let's see what else we got here. Frank Mir is somebody we were talking about earlier. He's going to be fighting Daniel Cormier, booked for a Strikeforce event in October or November. Frank Mir volunteered to temporarily move over to Strikeforce to face Cormier in their final heavyweight fight for Strikeforce. Just kind of a strange predicament there, I guess, after the heavyweight Grand Prix. Cormier and the other guy there, Barnett, were promised one more fight in Strikeforce. And obviously Cormier would definitely be taken into the UFC, no problems at all. But Barnett would probably need that one fight more than any other because of his history with steroids, you know, being outspoken and brash. So he might have a tougher time getting invited over to the UFC, but for now, I guess Frank Mir is going to Strikeforce for a token fight, I guess, with Daniel Cormier, and we'll see how he does there. But Dana White says there has been a lot of speculation as to who Cormier would fight next, and this is the fight that makes the most sense. The reality is Cormier is one of the best heavyweights in the world. He just won the Grand Prix and beat Josh Barnett. He needs to fight opponents of that caliber, and Frank Mir is that guy. And obviously Barnett's going to get his fight, but we haven't heard who that's going to be as far as I know. We'll see. And here's a story. We talked about this a while ago. Guy got arrested for I think it was arrest. Let me find the story before I start talking about it. I thought I had it. Tampa, Florida. We're going to go to a different story. Bellator Fighting Championships just made a big move to Russian TV, where they're going to be in front of millions of fans over there. And they further raised their profile by making some new signings. One of their prize new additions made a memorable debut with Paul Daly defeating Rudy Bears. Paul Daly was just added. He beat Rudy Bears by TKO at Bellator 72. And Daly was kind of famous for getting into that scuffle with Josh Koscheck and then punching him after the bell. And we thought he would never fight for Strikeforce even after that, you know, after that debacle went down when he went over to Strikeforce. It was kind of weird to see him stick around, and then they just didn't give him a fight once the UFC got a hold of him. But he welcomed himself to Bellator with the win over Rudy Bears. And next year, of course, they're going over to Spike. And definitely it's going to be an organization to keep an eye on. But that was in the news this week. Another story worth mentioning, we have kind of a local flair in the New England area. The New England Revolution plays their games in the same stadium that the New England Patriots play. And I think we've had him on the show, Neil O'Connor. Do you recall having that interview, Tony?
Yes, I did.
It's a while ago, because I think I saw him at a show here in Massachusetts. Gave his manager my card, and turns out now that he's actually going to be fighting at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough on August 12th. And it's a partnership with Warrior Boxing and Davella Entertainment. And they're going to bring boxing to the stadium. And Danny O'Connor from Framingham, Mass., he's going to be headlining a live professional boxing event following the Revolution's 7 p.m. game against the Montreal Impact. And it's expected to begin after the match at approximately 9 p.m. O'Connor was an alternate for the U.S. Olympic boxing team in 2008, and he'll be joined at the event by former New England Golden Glove champ Billy Traft and mixed martial arts standout John Downey. And Billy Traft actually was from my hometown of Dorchester, Mass., and he fought in the main events of the first Battle of the Badges that I went to. So it's some history there with him, too. It's pretty good news for Danny O'Connor. He could definitely use the elevation and status. His last fight, I think, was actually at the Boston House of Blues. And that was a successful event. So he's always thinking outside the box, I guess, with his career. Getting some good publicity and promotion there. Here's the fight that I was... Here's the story that I was thinking of here. All right. So I don't know where this is. Dayton police. So it could be Dayton, Ohio, or Dayton somewhere else. But there's this is... Yeah, I don't know. But this is a story that we talked about before about the initial arrest. But this kid's father got arrested now. I'll just read the whole story because it's pretty short. Dayton police raided a fundraiser on Saturday night at a local union hall and arrested six people on misdemeanor liquor and gambling violations. The event at the IUE Local 755 Hall was for 28-year-old Nicholas Boscarino, who was indicted in September after a brawl outside Taggart's Bar at Patterson Road in Wilmington Avenue. Boscarino, a mixed martial arts fighter, has been under house arrest since the August fight that ended up injuring three Dayton police officers, an off-duty West Carrollton officer, and two bystanders who helped bring the fighter into custody. Boscarino faces charges that include felonious assault and resisting arrest. Nicholas's father, Thomas, was among those arrested on Saturday. He acknowledged that organ bling. I thought if we labeled everything as donations and kept it in a spreadsheet, everything could be claimed on my income tax, he said. It's a permit to give people pizza and beer if they donate. Last year, he was on the sidewalk and he asked him to stop. Smith said that Boscarino started punching him. Smith radioed for assistance and needed the help of several bystanders to keep Boscarino under control. Smith and two other officers were injured making the arrest. Boscarino, the father, said he has spent more than $50,000 on the case, which he expects to go to trial in October. Saturday's event was organized to raise money for attorney fees and medical bills. The family has had to hire a neurosurgeon to testify in the Boscarino case. Dayton Police Lieutenant Wendy Stiver said organizers displayed a large sign in front of the building advertising beer and pizza for $15. That justified further investigation by our detectives who indeed verified liquor and gambling violations, she says. Vice Unit detectives obtained a search warrant, which was served around 10:45 p.m. About 50 people reportedly attended the event. The owners of the hall may also face charges. According to Stiver, no one from the IUE Local 755 was available for comment. Thomas Boscarino also said that earlier in the evening, police were parked across the street and pulled vehicles over for not stopping at a sidewalk before they exited a parking lot. He said police were harassing us. Stiver declined to comment on those allegations. Talk about giving MMA a bad name. I guess at least Nicholas wasn't there, huh? Beat up a few more cops, but that was kind of an interesting story. It goes to show you, if you're going to do a fundraiser, you know, you better check in with the police. Make sure all your permits are in order. And if you're going to do a fundraiser for a guy who beat up the police, you might expect some retaliation. Anyway. That's about it on my end as far as stories go. And we only have about 4 minutes left in the broadcast. You guys got any final thoughts or anything else to add?
Well, I guess if we're kind of on the surrealistic stories, in my travels, I found one dated June 5th. And it's former boxing champ and UFC veteran Melton Bowen says he knocked out zombie face-eater Rudy Eugene. Now, this is a wild one. So with one of the strangest and weirdest stories in a very long time just got stranger and a whole lot weirder. And now it has ties to the Ultimate Fighting Championship. Last week in Miami, 31-year-old Rudy Eugene ripped off his clothes and attacked a homeless man, brutally beating him and then biting flesh from his face. Police later shot and killed Eugene. But before the 2012 zombie apocalypse began, former heavyweight boxing champion and UFC 4 competitor Melton Bowen says he came blow to blow with Eugene. "I got him before he got me," Bowen said to a news reporter. Bowen said that he and Eugene were arguing about music before tensions rose and the two were involved in physical conflict. That occurrence took place in 2007 while Bowen was working at a flea market next to Eugene. During their conflict, Eugene tore off his shirt and came at Bowen before Bowen knocked him out with a single punch. Although no charges were filed from the incident, Bowen said Eugene threatened to kill him, yet Bowen claimed he still called Eugene a friend and was shocked at the bizarre story that unfolded just last week. "I can't believe a man would do that," Bowen said. If Bowen's name sounds familiar, you may remember him from the early days of the UFC. Bowen fought once professionally in mixed martial arts, losing to Steve Jenham at UFC 4 in December 1944. As a professional boxer, Bowen fought 44 times, winning 35, 28 by way of knockout. He captured the World Boxing Foundation Intercontinental Heavyweight title in 1993. So, how about that?
That's another lesson for listeners. Don't eat those bath salts. They're not good for you. Don't do anything with them. Don't snort them either. Drink cocaine.
Yeah. And obviously this Eugene had no idea who Melton Bowen was, or I think he would have thought twice about moving in on him, but there you go.
All right, folks. Well, that's going to do it for us. Thanks for stopping by. Thanks for listening. And we'll have a much better transmission next week, I'm sure. And we'll work on getting Joey back as a guest. And we'll see who else we can get. We'll try to get two for next week. So thanks.
Yeah, I'll get busy on that, too.
All right.
I'm out.
All right, guys.
I'll talk to Clinton and tell him. All right, see you later.
Enjoy the fights.
You too. Bye-bye.